This is Metalix with your host, B-Lo.
Metalix with B-Lo on every Monday night. Adobe Howell, 9 to 11 o'clock Eastern Time. And tonight, my guest via Skype, he's way out in California. He can't be here to join us right now, but he will be on the Denver date of Overkill with Niall and Necropanther will be there as well. That's February 20th at the Gothic here in Denver, but it is the 2017 North American tour. This is Professor Pizza from the band Axslasher on with me. My name is B-Lo. Professor Pizza, thank you for joining us.
Hello, B-Lo. Hello, Metalix. Thank you for having me. It's exciting to be back. What is this, like the third part of the horror movie series. You know, the villain has been established. We know how it's going to go. And this is, you know, we're just bringing it home for the fans now.
Oh, man. I like the reference there.
This is our third interview together on Metalix, right? I believe so. Or yeah. Is it the fourth?
Oh, man, it could be the seventh for all I know. You see, now that Metalix has been in the home studio, I might imbibe every now and again when I interview guests. So sometimes it can be hard for me to remember, which is exactly how horror movie villains prefer things to go.
Exactly. You set yourself up perfectly. But I do like when, it is unfortunate. I understand when the home studio is when the honey oil is very close at hand, it could be hard to see through the fog. But I also like when, have you seen Cabin in the Woods? There's a horror movie that makes weed smoking like a superpower. And that's kind of how I like to look at it for us horror nerds. You smoke a little weed, you get a little more perceptive, you start to get a little more paranoid and like looking around like, maybe I should look into that little noise over there. Maybe I shouldn't just, it's nothing.
Yeah, you know, Cabin in the Woods... that might be a tough reference, but Deathgasm, that's a much easier reference for everyone because everyone has seen it. It is the best, the most fantastic horror movie ever. No questions. No one has ever criticized it.
Ever. Never in the history of the world. I've never even heard that. Not once. I think that it won every award that was possible.
100% at Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, 100%. No one's ever said anything bad about it. That's the way I like to look at it. That's the way the world works now, right? You just believe what you want, and that's what you broadcast, and it becomes the law.
Well, this is the way things work in 2017. When you have when you have a mic, when you have everyone's attention, you just make whatever claim you possibly can, and that's what lives on into eternity. Truth be damned. Okay, there... Okay, Deathgasm, an excellent movie, and if there were critics, you know, I just don't think that they were enjoying the movie the right way, possibly.
You definitely don't want to go to a party with them, that's for sure.
Well, you might not bust out the references. You might test the waters first to find out if you're safe. You know, reference some other things, like Cabin in the Woods.
Or possibly... Start soft and then get dark.
Right. Or Anthology of Terror?
Ah, that old thing. Yes, that's seeing a physical release for the first time in, five fucking years. Finally, on physical form, it becomes material February 20th at the Overkill show.
Ah, very nice. So you'll be playing on the Denver venue there, but actually... We're talking to you in California. How exactly does this work, Professor Pizza from the band Axslasher?
Well, you know, there's a few members of the band that actually still live and are entombed in the mountains of California. They can only be, risen with the right blood oath, and the right combination of chicken feathers and just general hatred in the area. And there's been a lot of hatred in the world, and we're ready to come back and, you know, long story short, everyone's off their tour schedule and their bones are ready to be shaken, and we're ready to play.
All right. Well, you have probably heard Axslasher interviewed on Metalix before, the 12 times? I think it might have been 12.
Yeah, we're on part 12. We've got a new director. The script's in the works. It's rumored to be handheld shaky cam, but yeah, we're on 12 now.
All right. Excellent. Is it that Lost dude who did this one, or was that 11? I don't know. I can't remember.
I think that they're just handing it off between like the first guy that held the camera on the last one. Now he's going to move up to director. I think they're just moving it on the chain as they go now.
Oh, fair enough. Professor Pizza from the band Axslasher. And those of you who did not hear interviews before this, Professor, please tell us kind of what is Axslasher like? Because to me, this is more than just a metal band. Yes, I would throw them into the overall very broad metal subcategory, but it's also a performance. Tell me about the Axslasher performance. What can people expect?
You know, at a live show, we've been known to summon the power of a severed head that can spray blood up to 20 feet in the across the room. You know, gallon and a half of blood a show, perhaps. But it's all about worshiping horror and letting myself go and letting the audience go in the moment. You know, like we're in the middle of the horror movie. The guy's here. He's attacking. You're either with him or against him, and let's have some fun. It's all out raucous. Jason has been known to show up. We've been known to hang people from the rafters if people are available and willing to sacrifice their bodies in such a way. It's really just what kind of chaos can we cause within the 20 minutes someone allows us to be upon a stage?
Well, and there's a visual effect too. You guys, you wear these ski masks, which remind me that ski masks are like, I don't care how well they protect you from winds and snow when you're on an actual ski slope, those things are creepy as fuck. And I know that Skype, like Messenger, it has a little emoji with a guy in a ski mask, and I think it's meant to just represent general sneakiness, but it's just creepy when that one comes up. I mean, it gives me this, like, other chill, you know, that I really don't think Skype emojis are meant to convey. They could do that with the Hamburglar eye ribbon, but the ski mask is uniquely creepy, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Like, the great thing about the ski mask is that it's just instant anonymity. Anonymity? I'm too fucking high to say that. Anonymity. You can be very, you understand what I mean. Incognito.
Great tool album.
Right?
Yeah.
It's very easy to just slip one on and disappear and like, holy shit, who is that? Especially if you're wearing all black or, you know, no identifying. That's the thing about it. It's fascinating that it's a quick way to remove all identifying features from the face, save for like maybe the color of the eyes. But if it's dark enough, you're not going to see anything. It's just, who the fuck are you? What do you want? Like, there's no reason for you. Like, it's not cold enough for you to act like that. You don't have to hide all your face from it.
Right. Now, I don't want to get too far into mentioning bands that I'm, like, not really into and using other bands' interviews time to kind of rip other acts. Because who cares? I don't want to take someone down who's trying real hard. But there's totally a, like, pop punk kind of band that does the ski mask thing, and it's like, no, like, this doesn't work in like a silly context. It only works in the creepy context. The silly context is just kind of like, wow, it must suck getting all sweaty in that thing. And I bet you those, well, you would know, the ski mask must be a pretty sweaty experience.
It's not exactly the greatest thing to wear. Like, anytime you put anything on your face for a stage show, you're always like, why the fuck am I doing this? It's never like a fun thing to be in a bunch of lights trying to jump around and be excited in something that restricts your breathing and makes you hot. But there's also something like a humbling reminder of like, no, you're here to perform. It's time to go. And this is like part of the ritual. You know, that's the exciting thing. Back to, you know, like a pop punk band using the visual of like, you know, some threatening masked intruder coming into your house and saying something, you know, or doing something to you. It's kind of weird, but I don't know. I think there's plenty of room for it, man. Like, I don't think that we're going to have a crossover of fans. I don't think anyone's going to discover us and be like, hey, what's going on? Like, if it ever does happen, hey, good for you. You have a wide range of taste in music, but I don't really see the streams crossing that much.
oh, well, discovery is a pretty awesome thing. I think also really confused pop punk kids at an axe slasher show would also be pretty hilarious. But let's do this. Let's listen to some axe slasher right now. We'll come back and talk a little bit more. It is Metalix, or possibly the Metalix podcast, in which case you won't hear music, and we'll go straight back into me talking with Professor Pizza. My name is B-Lo, Adobe Howell, Metalix, Monday night, 9. This is Metalix. You heard Axe Slasher. They are opening at the Overkill date in Denver, February 20th at the Gothic. Sorry, it took me a minute to bring up that graphic. Overkill with Nile, Necropanther will be at this date as well. But it is a national tour for Overkill and Nile. So, I mean, if you are possibly near Denver or somewhere in North America, which I suppose is near Denver in the scope of the globe, then you should look out for the tour. In fact, it's possible you might have actually already seen a date on the tour. But B-Lo here with Professor Pizza of the band Axe Slasher. We're actually recording inside of the Metalix time rift, time space rift. And really, time doesn't exist here. It's both the future and the present and the past.
Oh, man, you're smoking good shit over there. Denver's got that good legal shit.
Well, that's right. But it's not like California was all that far behind in developing the good legal stuff. Shit.
Actually, California started in what is it, 96, I think, is when California went medically legal. I can't remember when it went medically legal in Colorado, but I was still living there at the time. But I remember it just shooting up like, you know, like a pun intended, a fucking weed. Right. Just like anywhere you could go, it was just there. And it was not exactly difficult to get a card, but it was daunting at the time. Here, they've got it worked out where you can, through an app, have a doctor give you a call on Skype and be like, yeah, you look like, go ahead, boom. And the next thing you know, you can order it on the app and it's brought to you. It's not like the greatest quality, but hey, that's an option now. And I'm sure that's coming to Denver if it's not already there. We've got strong medical game. You can definitely, I think the biggest thing I noticed when I'm in Denver versus out here is the potency available. Obviously, for adult use or recreational use they have out there, it's much less potent than what they have available for medical. But even just comparing medical to medical, I can find like 1,000 milligram brownies out here, 750 milligram brownies out here. And that's an insane dose, of course. It's not something you should consume every day, but the fact that those seem pretty rare in Denver is what I've observed. Is that what you've observed? And what is your favorite way to imbibe while you're in the home studio, my friend?
Wow, we're turning the tables here. Suddenly I'm the one being interviewed. B-Lo on Metalix with Professor Pizza from the band Axe Slasher. I would say there's usually some alcohol that happens before or during the interview on pretty much any night, assuming that the night is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. B-Lo might be a bigger fan of sativa than indica, because indica might put old B-Lo to sleep. That is, if there's that stuff possibly going on in the interview, which you can almost always tell in my interviews, I forget the things that I want to say. There's a lot more uhs and likes. But ultimately, I think there's Mob Boss is a really good strain that I find a lot around here. Mob Boss.
Mob Boss.
Yeah, you should check that one out, but it sounds less potent than what you have out in California with at least your part of Axe Slasher, Mr. Professor Pizza.
Hey, you know, I'm talking about all sorts of different things out there, you know, edibles, concentrates, flour, all that kind of stuff. Point is, I'm happy that it's available. I'm looking forward to that industry to growing immensely. Good on Colorado for showing people how it's done, how to be responsible with this shit. I've even heard that there's a couple of like government sponsored programs where essentially they and another cannabis brand are testing out public consumption and basically saying, we're going to find three businesses to let us do it for 3 months and then we'll analyze the results and it'll be the government's choice if we can do this, you know, full time or maybe we zone things, but it's cool that they're working with the businesses out there instead of just being like, fuck it. It's all just do it in your house.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of liquor license stuff that goes in with all of that, too. But Bilo with Professor Pizza of the band Axe Slasher. How did you come to be Professor Pizza? Did you take courses in this? Did you major in something? Is there a doctorate in pizza?
Pizzology? I put in the time. I put in the effort, you know, long strand DNA when it comes to eating pizza, real time, long time, full time, all the time. It's a way of life. It's something that I've done forever. I eat it all the time. I could eat it. It's the one thing that if it were to leave the earth, I'd be very sad, you know, other than Dr. Girlfriend and my dog Ripley.
Dr. Girlfriend. Did you name your dog after Sigourney Weaver, an alien in the Alien series?
Fuck yeah, I did.
That's awesome.
You're goddamn right I did.
Dude, that's great, Professor.
It's a great way to weed people out really quickly of what they think that the name is from. Either they think the name is Ridley, which is usually older people, or they think it's Ripley's Believe It or Not, which is normally just kind of like a dorky person. And then there's the regular the kind of person that I want to hang with that gives you that little nod. And they're like, oh, yeah? Ripley? Ellen Ripley, huh? Fuck yeah, it's Ellen Ripley. And then you're off to the races and you want to meet their dog.
Have you seen these alien memes that have been going around with Sigourney Weaver getting bitten at by the alien, except they crop out the alien, and now they've been putting in, like, various people in the Trump administration. Actually, I saw one that was a cat licking Ripley, and it said right after your cat cleans his butthole. It was actually, I don't know. It's hard to describe memes on the radio. That was a straight-up experiment right there. We'll look back at the data later on and find out if it made a difference.
we'll find out how the crowd reacts, and we'll see where the drop-off is and where the engagement is. Ah, we'll understand. Hey, I like the experiment of trying to explain a meme on the radio. I, for one, understood the picture you were painting with your words, and I have not seen these, but now I know what to be on the lookout for, and it sounds pretty funny. I could see a Pence with a, you know, quadruple mouth coming out, or any one of those slimy motherfuckers.
Yeah, they're going to make a new Alien movie. Did you see the trailer for it?
I don't have a lot of faith in that. I think that, what's his name, Neil Blomkamp, I think he's out there trying to raise the money right now, and he's getting people hyped. He's showing people how excited people would be, and he's like, look, come on, let's make this movie, and he'll put out a little thing here, a little thing there, until finally someone drops the cash to make it happen. But I don't know. Have they actually started shooting? Do they have a script? That's what I want to know.
Does that really happen with movies? I'm unfamiliar with the Hollywood thing, so I mean, I would assume it should work no different than like the stock market or really anything else. You kind of strategically hype your brand or whatever to get more people to buy into it, whether it's like going to be awesome or not. Which, I mean, there were some parts of that trailer that looked super cheesy.
Yeah, there's been, you know, since like 2007, a pretty big strategy to get a movie funded is to shoot like a 30-second to 2-minute trailer of like what the movie would be like, to show people that here's what I want to do. Your money goes into X, Y, and Z, and this is what we'll get if we're successful, and here's what we'll lose if we're not successful. But I haven't seen a trailer. I guess I should check that out. If they've got a trailer going, they're much more serious about it than I thought. But yeah, it does happen in Hollywood all the time, especially with like, that's kind of like how independent cinema works, is you either get someone to fund it, you raise the money yourself from a whole bunch of smaller donors, or you have a company that's been successful for a while and you can pay for it for yourself, or you sell the idea to a studio. Like the main, like one of the biggest kind of, you're talking about hyping your pitch. James Cameron, when he pitched Aliens, the second one, he basically just walked into the studio and he wrote the word alien on the board in chalk. He looked at all the executives and then he wrote the S, and then he put like two lines through it to make the S into a dollar sign. And he just looks at him and goes, who's in? And he just let them fight it out there. And they all signed on the dotted line to make Aliens. Like, that's all he had to do. But then other people have to make a whole big pitch and sell it to the internet and show they got, oh, I got 100,000 clicks of, you know, one video. So it gets crazy out there. It's all private deals.
I think we all learned something really interesting right there. Whether many of us in the Metalix audience currently, as in pre-recorded when no one else can hear us except for my roommate, or live, which would be, you know, on Monday night. And then people, you know, some people would probably have heard of it, or the podcast, which could be like 6 years in the future. Who knows? And then they already like would have known about this like way long ago. Like, listen to these guys talking about that Alien remake. Yeah, of course it was fucking terrible.
Listen how excited they are. Yeah, they still thought it was going to be good.
Yeah. I can't wait for Terminator 10 to come out. That's what those future people will be saying. But yeah, I mean, that's really interesting. Imagine instead of Axe Slasher as it is currently now, where you have enough songs at least for a set, but on Anthology of Terror, way more songs than you need for one whole set. Imagine if you just write a 2-minute part of a song and then send that to record labels. It would never work in the music industry.
It's kind of, dude, that's what we did. I made, like, when Axe Slasher started and I got serious with it, I didn't have a song, but I had like the beginning of 4 songs. So I was like, well, what if I did some stupid shit, like made them go in between each other like a trailer? So I cut a bunch of pieces out of The Burning and a couple other movies that I like and different trailers. And I had Slasher Dave from Acid Witch make like this awesome fucking synthy original piece. I put them all together and said that was the trailer for what Axe Slasher was going to be, just to see if anyone wanted to fucking hear it. Because I was like, I'm getting super serious into this. I want to make it, but I also want to know if anyone wants to fucking hear it. And it was enough of a response for me to go full on into it. And here we are. I'm still writing shit and approaching it the same way. I've got like a graveyard full of riffs that, you know, a lot of song ideas that I just don't think are ready for prime time. And then a lot of stuff that's ready, it's polished, and it's going to be released soon. It's constantly ever flowing. I don't think in albums. I just think in constant movement.
So every recording is basically just chopped out of your stream of consciousness, which goes on forever.
No, it's more like if I knew how to write music, I would just be writing it down every time I played and then, you know, putting it together. But because I have so many digital tools available and just, you know, lots of cool things, it's like, why not capture all these different sessions and find out what's good about them, cut them up, put them in together. And then when it's like, you can write a song with different blocks instead of, it's a way to write entire songs and movements kind of by yourself, right? Instead of with the entire band or whenever it strikes you at 3 a.m. or 1 a.m., whatever.
That's Professor Pizza from the band Axe Slasher. They are opening on the Denver date of Overkill's National North American Tour with Nile. And this particular date is February 20th at the Gothic. Here's what I think we should do. Let's give away a pair of tickets tonight. We will think of a secret code. You have to win this. You have to win this listening live or on any of the Adobe replays. If you're listening to this on the podcast, this will come out after the show, so it wouldn't count if you're listening to this on the podcast. Tickets, February 20th at the Gothic. Axe Slasher is opening for Overkill and Nile. Email me now, BLO@idobe.com, or find me on Facebook. That's /METALIX or Twitter @MetalixDenver. Hit me up on any of those. The first person that hits me up anywhere says, hey, I want free tickets to see Overkill because I heard this Axe Slasher interview or something, you know, mention Axe Slasher. Tag them is what would be the better idea. Email me, post the tweet or the Facebook poster or whatever, and the first person will give away a pair of tickets. So if you're listening on the podcast, those tickets are like already gone. In fact, the show already happened, but the podcast happens in the Metalix time space continuum. Professor.
All right, so here's what they have to email you or what they have to send you. We said that there's going to be a secret code.
Oh, a secret code.
Secret code.
Sorry.
Here's the secret code.
Yeah.
I want to be slashed by Axe Slasher. And you, whatever combination of words you can use to make that happen. It doesn't have to be exactly that. I'll know what you're talking about. But you want to be slashed by Axe Slasher. That's how you get a free ticket or two, or maybe one or two to the Overkill Nile Axe Slasher Necro Panther show at the Gothic Theater in Denver, Colorado on February 20th. February 20th.
All right. So, yes, that's email, Facebook, or Twitter. You know, whoever's the first person to really reach out in any way, you know, somehow we'll figure out this really crazy contest. But I want to get slashed by Axe Slasher. That is your code. Just post it or email
slash
it to me.
Slash me.
Slash me at Axe Slasher. What? What am I talking about?
Who knows, man? We're just giving people stuff to hold on to. We're just trying to give away the free tickets to the kids. First person to reach out and say something to prove that you fucking heard us talking about it gets some free tickets.
That's right. That's right. Why does it have to be so complicated?
Nah, it's not complicated.
Axe Slasher opening for Overkill and Nile February 20th at the Gothic. It's a national Overkill tour.
We found some...
Slasher on Metalix, I Dobie Howell. Professor Pizza, you've blessed us.
Thank you.
With quite a bit of time. We feel so blessed. So privileged to have this time, really.
No, the pleasure is all mine. Thank you.
So Axe Slasher is opening for Overkill and Nile on the 20th at the Gothic, February 20th, 2017, for those of us listening far into the future, alien anthropologists investigating our culture. They'll listen to Axe Slasher and they'll be like, okay, like if this is what 2017's all about, we'll move right on into 2016. Let's see what happened here. Yeah, presidential election.
Watch the profession.
Yeah, all right.
Move into 2018 where they can see, you know, the Trumpanistas taking us away in the middle of a performance. 2019 when they see us on the, you know, steps of the Lincoln Memorial. 2020 they see us running for president. 2021 there's nothing left to run. And I think that's kind of the timeline of events we're looking at here.
Wow. Okay, so those of
calling
us
calling it now. Any aliens that are listening or have insight into the future, let me know how I do. I want to be Nostradamus. Pizza Domus, here we are.
Yeah, tweet at us. I'm sure Twitter will have like tweet archives for like decades and centuries by the time aliens hear us.
Yes, prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. Go ahead and find like the ancient Sumerian texts that show exactly when the chosen one comes or whatever your proof is of what's going to happen. I'm looking for any alternative facts other than the ones that I just laid out. I'm looking for a new timeline.
Oh, man, a whole new timeline. It happens every minute that passes by here on this interview. Professor Pizza from the band Axe Slasher. So... Anthology of Terror came out quite some time ago, and are you working on new music?
Oh, yes, absolutely. There's definitely new music. The thing is that Anthology of Terror, it's been out for a while, and then we've been releasing singles a lot like kind of, I look at it like a rap group, really, or we're looking at releasing more mixtapes and generating interest. I'm not really... I'm not sure if you've kept up with the industry in terms of what it's like to produce physical media, but... It's quite a burden. I don't really see much a reason for it, but I'm definitely willing to partner with labels who want to go in on that kind of endeavor. But I'm more interested in creating new cool music, new cool merch, more visuals, more music videos and things like that for the band. And not really worrying about physical media unless it's something like vinyl. But vinyl's gotten so competitive right now that if you're not Jack White or you're not on Warner Brothers, it's kind of like, man, you got to get everything in a year in advance, and it's more of a bummer. It's like, no, I want to move on a different timeline. I want to release shit when I want to on a different scale. So we're experimenting with that in 2017 and really making sure that we just keep up the production and release a lot of new music.
Yeah, Record Store Day completely messes up that whole vinyl scheme. That this year is Saturday, April 22nd. But what happens around the same time as every Record Store Day every year is those big labels push around the vinyl, what do you call them, like pressers, like these plants that make vinyl. They basically they bully them around and pay extra to get the vinyls of whatever like dumb release that isn't a real release from these major labels that have the money to do that sort of thing. I call it bullying. I guess it's a little more like economic bullying, which is just like, yo, we have the power because we have the money, so we're just going to do it and fuck everyone else who was basically on a schedule or had a commitment. We're overriding everything because of Record Store Day. That's how I hear this wreaks havoc on the music industry. I'm not sure. I don't know. Have you heard about this too, Professor Pizza, Axe Slasher?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, it's the here's the real story is that, you know, when vinyl became the non-prevalent physical format of the time and CDs were really hot in the late 80s and 90s and thousands, you know, a lot of record pressing plants just simply went under, or the people who were running it didn't see the investment worth the time to keep the plant going. So, you know, you went from hundreds to maybe five across the country to maybe two at one time. And they were desperate for business. That's why there were so many punk releases at that time on vinyl. You know, you could get a 7-inch at any time because they're like, fuck yeah, we'll press anything. Like, come on, bring it on. We don't care. You got $200, let's press it. And then as economic demand and, you know, hipsterism and all sorts of other things you want to look at. But, you know, vinyl came back. People wanted analog solutions again for listening to music. And it just became competitive because marketers saw that they're using Facebook and everything else to figure out exactly what you like and what you listen to shit on. And we all willingly put it out there on Discogs and Last.fm and everything else so they can just understand exactly what we want. And next thing you know, they're like, okay, people want vinyl. They have this, even if they're just collecting it, there's a huge market for that. There's a huge market for this. Let's just go in and we've got schedules we want to keep and we'll just tell them we'll pay you whatever it takes to make these schedules happen. And that's kind of how it works. Like, I don't know if it's bullying. It's gross. It sucks that, you know, like you were desperate for punk business, you know, a couple of years ago or 10 years ago. And now you can't even get anything pressed. But shit happens, man. What really needs to happen is more people need to open some presses if there's really that type of demand. And it's choking smaller artists out there. Maybe there's a demand for some of us smaller artists to get together and make our own pressing plants or, you know, but then there's also the internet. You can turn it around and say the great equalizer there is that you can just be like, fuck physical shit. If labels want to partner with it, we can, but we're just going to keep releasing stuff on the internet and give it to people for as cheap as possible because it doesn't cost us a lot to make it other than our time and energy.
Well, we mentioned something. I thought we mentioned something about rap music earlier. Professor Pizza is my guest. My name is B-Lo. This is Metalix on Adobe Howl or the Metalix podcast. You know, the main proponents now that I ever see for physical media, other than at shows where the band is selling things at their merch stand, is dudes in independent little rap groups or whatever on the street in like the 16th Street Mall here in Denver typically is where I ever see that. And they're always trying to like hand sell CDs for like $1 or $2. It's like, man, this is just your music put on a CD. I will make mixes and give it to my friends for free because I want them to hear the music. Like, so the idea now in the internet, in the age of the internet, of charging $1 or $2, when if that artist was really savvy, that's what they would be doing. But I don't know. Could you see yourself? It sounds like you couldn't even see yourself handing out CDs on the mall, like on the pedestrian mall or whatever. Hey, it's Axe Slasher in your Professor Pizza in your ski mask standing on the in the pedestrian mall trying to give away CDs. Boy, I think they'd boot you out of there in like an hour or less.
Yeah, but they're not gonna let me stay on there for very long, especially when I bust out the severed head and the blood squirting shit. They're not gonna let me stay.
Sounds like that's not the preferred strategy of Axe Slasher.
No, not at all. We're more interested in putting our stuff on something like Bandcamp that, you know, it gives you the highest quality possible straight from our bounce down mix to your ears. And we essentially package everything on Bandcamp for less than $1. Whatever the cheapest they'll let me put the entire discography on there for is what I make it on there for. Obviously, if you want to buy or pre-order the new tape, that's available there, and that's going to cost you $6.66. But the point is, the digital media, the music itself, I'm trying to release it as cheap as possible. Just let it out there. Let people have it. And, you know, whatever I can get it away for letting it go for is what I will. And that's kind of our strategy, is we'll let it go. And I hope that people spread it and listen to it. And, you know, so far, so good. It's ended up in movies. It's ended up on all sorts of different Instagram posts and fucking YouTube videos and everything else I can think of. And I'm happy as shit about that. Like, I want to keep that going. And I think that setting things up like a physical block of like, okay, we got to wait for the album to come out, like engage in that whole cycle and all that kind of stuff, is kind of more of a barrier than a good thing, I guess.
Yes, the somewhat organic marketing approach. We're getting really into the weeds and shop talk here, but the weeds is where the bodies get buried, right?
That's right, down deep. Actually, the weeds grow where the bodies have been buried. It's very fertile ground.
That's right. That's right. Okay, Professor Pizza from the band Axslasher on Metalix. One last question, and I would hope this would be just kind of an off-the-top-of-the-head kind of question. If you need a minute, let us know. We'll fill it up bullshitting about something. Hey, maybe our ticket giveaway. We should still talk about the ticket. In fact, I'll ask you the question, pimp the tickets, and then we'll come back to your answer so that you get, like, 30 seconds extra. The question, all right. The question for Professor Pizza of the band Axslasher is, who are your top three horror movie villains? Now, you think about that, Professor Pizza, if you have to. I'm not sure you will. And here's what we're doing tonight on the live broadcast or on the Adobe replay if we haven't given away the tickets already. Because by the time the tickets, by the time the podcast comes out, the show will already have happened. So I apologize for this. But Axslasher is opening for Overkill along with Nile on the 2017 North American tour. This on just at the Denver date, though. This is February 20th at the Gothic. So I have tickets to that date, a pair of tickets to the Gothic, February 20th, Overkill with Nile. Just email me, BLO@adobe.com. You know, I'll totally take the first email or the first post on Facebook or the first tweet, because all of those things have times attached to them. I can see what came in first. But extra special consideration, if you use the phrase, I want to get slashed for Axslasher. Is that what it was, Professor Pizza?
Yeah, slash me up. Something slash about being slashed. You know, the whole thing is slash, slash, slash. Yeah, I'm trying to trump it up here and just repeat something. Slash, slash.
It was
slash, slash,
slash. Hashtag slash. It's the most fantastic, the best hashtag you can use. Only
hashtag slash.
The most popular accounts use the hashtag slash.
Only the best accounts, the brightest accounts, the accounts that are moving the best and are the most successful use hashtag slash.
Yeah, most retweeted, most liked ever. That's how you do it. You use the hashtag slash. So back to my question before the ticket giveaway there, Professor Pizza, your top three horror movie villains ever.
All right, the top three villains in particular order. Number one, actually I'm going to count down from three to one. Number three, Beetlejuice. And the reason I say Beetlejuice is a villain is because his chaotic neutral nature is what moves the story along. He has no allegiance either way. He just exists to fuck shit up and enjoy the fruits of that labor. And that's why I love Beetlejuice. I look at him as a role model. He's certainly someone that I look up to. And if the afterlife is anything like that movie, I plan to also be a freelance paranormal. I'm going to scare the fuck out of people. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do it on a freelance basis. You know, number two, Michael Myers. There's something about that guy and that shape that moves around that is just fucking terrifying. He can't be stopped. He is the embodiment of pure evil, and I love that that is just the simple explanation of it. It's not that, you know, there is nothing other than, hey, I don't know, evil. That's it. It's evil. We can't explain it any further than that, other than evil keeps him coming back here every Halloween to do this terrible deed. And then finally, my favorite, I could watch this series of films till the end of time. You could take away every other film, and I can't explain exactly why, but I could watch them until Until There Is No Light Forevermore. That's the Friday the 13th series, and that is Jason Voorhees. He's my favorite character of all time. I love just the fucking symbolicness of the just that iconic hockey mask and fucking all the, you know, it's just fucking awesome. I get all excited and I can't even say words. I just start making noises and pretending I'm choking shit because that's what I want to be fucking Jason in a movie. It'd be so fucking fun.
Well, here's my quick reaction to this because I am not a horror movie buff like you are. I think that quote horror movies are really lately, like for the last 15, 20 years, you probably hear this all the time. It's just shit jumping out at you. So it's not like truly scary, like you take it home and you're totally disturbed by it. But as far as Beetlejuice, you described him as chaotic neutral, but you seem to appreciate him for being chaotic evil, existing just to fuck shit up. But that's me picking on a character alignment there. Michael Myers, didn't something cause him to be evil in the first place? Isn't that like the essence of some of these more old school horror movies? Is it's like, oh yeah, some crazy shit happens, but like crazy shit happened to that guy too.
No, it's more that he's a child. Like the movie, the whole series starts through his eyes as a child when he first kind of comes online as evil and kills his sister. And it's also like the symbolic representation of the first time anyone understood that he was evil. But like that sets off the chain of events of taking him off to a mental hospital to examine him. And that's why Lupus comes back to examine or check up on everything, because he heard that he had escaped from the asylum and essentially he was so disturbed by dealing with that child that he knew that as a man, he was going to be a terror and he was probably going to be pure evil doing horrific things. That's why he comes back armed looking for him so frantically. But it's just like he's always been evil. He just was evil incarnate. And as a child, you know, he basically was a child up until the point that he could be sentient. And once he became sentient, he just killed his sister, the first person around him.
Wow. Okay. So he is pretty like straight up like horrible evil, but definitely some wicked shit happened to Jason Voorhees, which kind of turns him into the monster that he became. I mean, he wasn't just like in that lake for no reason.
That's right. Jason was, you know, he was a mongoloid, and you know, depending on which point you're at in the series, he's either a mongoloid or he's straight up mentally retarded. But essentially, as a kid, he was at the camp. His mother was a counselor at the camp, and a lot of the counselors were on break. They should have been paying attention to her little boy. He ends up drowning because a bunch of kids are picking on him and is, you know, kind of scare him into the lake. And whoop, next thing you know, the poor mongoloid kid is dead. And the first movie in the series is his mother taking revenge on everyone. She's killed at the end of that movie via decapitation, assumedly in front of him. We don't know for sure, but that movie ends with him rising as a 13-year-old boy out of the muck and bringing the last surviving woman underneath the water. In part two, he's much larger. I don't know how many years passed between him being a 13-year-old boy and him being a much larger.
He was bloated. It was the water. it's water weight.
He triples in mass. It's pretty significant between one and two, but he wears a pretty creepy. What do you call it? It's a pillowcase
mask.
The third one.
Oh, God.
He goes the whole second movie just in a pillowcase, and that's pretty creepy, too.
Oh, like a KKK mask?
Yeah, it's a pillowcase with one eye cut out of it because he's only got one good eye because he's got a mongoloid face. We'll have to catch you up next time I'm out there. We'll get a lot of spleef and we'll go through all of these.
I'll
give you the full presentation, letting you know, like, the significant timeline of events of Jason Voorhees.
Oh, yeah, I see him. He totally does look like something out of like movie about racist Alabama or something like that, though. If you didn't know what this was. Professor Pizza on Metalix, thank you so much for joining us tonight, sir.
Thank you for having me. It's been a blast, man. I love doing this.
We look forward to the next time we see you. And, of course, people in Denver will see you February 20th at the Gothic opening for Overkill along with Nile. You have yourself an excellent night. And Axe Slasher rules.
Thank you.
This has been Metalix with your host, B-Lo. And now, back to Adobe Owl.